Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you, Mr. Christopher Fritchie and the gentlemen of the band. And good morning to you. Happy New Year. I was reflecting with some of my old-time friends here at the center that 25 years ago it was that I was hired as the senior minister for the center almost to the day, a week ago, 25 years ago. So I started in January of 1994. And the custom at Centers for Spiritual Living at that time was to review the first four chapters of Dr. Ernest Holmes, our founder's book, The Science of Mind. This is my original Science of Mind book from my very first class. I still have it in its little plastic cover. And the topics that centers all over the country and the world were studying together matched the first four topics of the Science of Mind textbook: the thing itself, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. And 25 years later, we're picking up that tradition again and starting this 2019 with the review of the basics of our teaching. And by the way, as you heard Reverend Tara say, we're going to continue all year with free one-hour classes on spirituality and science of mind on Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m., open to anyone who wants to learn more about our teaching. And we're adding something new to it, and that is a question and answer session for people to be able to ask the questions on their heart. Now, when we were planning the theme and the focus of 2019, we thought it was a great idea to start with the review of the basics of our teaching before we ventured out into the world to do anything else. Because although we are looking at spirituality in action in the world, and we're doing that through such topics as spiritually motivated social action, diversity and inclusion, freedom of thought, respect for other nations and people, we're doing all of that through the lens of science of mind. So this year, we'll be asking ourselves over and over again, how do I apply my spirituality to what wants to happen in this world of mine, of ours? How does what I'm learning at the center influence or inform the way I show up, the way I engage in political conversations, in charity? What does spirituality in action look like for me and my choices in the world? So I was thinking about this and how 25 years ago I started. So I went to my files and I got out my notes from 25 years ago in January on this topic of the way it works to see what did I say. Was anybody there? I was saying earlier this morning, I'm surprised you let me stay. So let's see what I can recover from it. So by now, if you've been hanging out here for a while, you know that when we say the way it works with it, we are referring to the thing itself. And when we say the thing itself, what we mean by that is the source of all being, the wisdom, the love, the power, the energy, the strength, the beauty, the intelligence, the mind, the spirit, the truth, that is the all-powerful and everywhere present creator, or As you heard in the opening prayer, God, if you prefer. We mean the gender neutral, all-inclusive, eternal, everywhere present, whatever it is. So our question this month, well, today specifically, is how does that work? Or another way to ask it is, thinking of the thing itself as love, how does love work in my life? Thinking of the thing itself as all-knowing, absolute intelligence, how does that work in my life? Thinking of the thing itself as creator, creation, the energy of creation, how does that work in my life? And Dr. Ernest Holmes, in chapter 2 of The Science of Mind, offers the answer. He says that the thing itself, spirit, works in your life and works in my life by working through us. Not so much like a power that is controlling us, like a puppeteer holding our strings, but more like a power that is flowing and flowing through us. And that's not the only way that it works. But when it comes to you and me and our lives and our engagement in the world, it becomes a very important piece of the spiritual puzzle. The way that creation flows through me. One of Dr. Ernest Holmes's students was, his name was George Bendall, a very interesting character. He was a minister too. He, towards the end of Dr. Holmes's life, George Bendall was his driver, his aide, his assistant, his confidant. So he knew everything. And I had the privilege of being able to take some classes with Dr. Bendall when I was in the School of Ministry. And it was so fascinating just sitting there listening to him talk about what did Ernest Holmes do as a spiritual practice, how he would meditate, what he was interested in. And Dr. Bendall told us that towards the end of Ernest Holmes's time on this planet, he always and only talked about three topics. These three things. Number one, that there is only one God common to all people, in and through all things, all beings. Two, that we are surrounded by this and infused with this presence, which not only creates, but in part creates by responding to our thought with what Dr. Holmes called mechanical regularity. And the third thing was that the importance of using this power was to use it to love one another like Jesus of Nazareth taught us. Indeed, Dr. Holmes characterized this power of creation as absolute love. And he called it the self-givingness of the universe. And he advised us to harmonize ourselves with that, to sync with it, or better, to realize that is exactly who we are. Universal, absolute love in action. Now, it's the second point that we are considering today, our relationship to the divine, our identity, and the creative nature of our thought, and how does that work? Now, in one of our Wednesday night wisdom series a while ago, and those free Wednesday classes at 7 p.m., we studied the book with the title Cure by Joe Marchant. The subtitle is A Journey into the Science of Mind Over Body. She writes about all the latest research into the body-mind phenomenon. And we got to learn in those classes about the mind's astonishing ability to create substantial change in our bodies. And it got us to thinking about the question, what instructions are we giving to life by what we accept? How does what is inside of us deeply impact our progress, our joy in life? How does what we dwell on what we are convinced by as individuals, as a nation. How does that work? And how is it turning out for us? How's it working? Do they turn these beliefs into self-fulfilling prophecies? We looked at that not to become afraid of our thinking, but to discover if there is a better way, especially if we accept this idea that the creative intelligence of life is flowing through us and taking the shape of our inner life. So let's get some examples, and these are from my notes. In 1993, and I believe if I'm remembering correctly, it was on the Oprah Winfrey Show. There was a TV show that showed the impact of false HIV test results on individuals. People who had incorrectly received a positive result manifested all of the symptoms of full-blown AIDS. Wasting, decreased energy, night sweats, etc., even though the results were incorrect. Now, another example with a more upbeat tone. In the 90s, before I took this job as the senior minister here, I was a volunteer for the organization called Shanti Foundation. Shanti Foundation trains volunteers to provide emotional support for people with terminal diagnoses, life-threatening diseases. And one of my very first clients that I had in my first meeting with him told me about the devastating news he had received from his doctor saying that his T-cell count was so low that he was in serious trouble. You know, in those days, we didn't have a handle on virus suppression, so a low T-cell count was very serious, as it is today. So he was told that stress would make things worse and to stop worrying. So he said to me, I don't know how to do that. I appreciated that, and I had no answer. So he took matters into his own hands. And he went on what he called an I Love Lucy binge watch. He really did. And he played all of the I Love Lucy shows back to back in the background while he did his chores at home, while he did everything, to the point where he was able to recite the dialogue along with the actors. And what he was doing, he was crowding into his mind an innocent joy. And don't you know, he had the kind of results that are reported in that book, Cure, with the more contemporary research results. His mood improved. His fight came back. His immune system improved. But importantly to me, he became an inspiration for other clients who had given up. That's the way it works, by working through us in the direction of our acceptance. Another example. Now, I don't recall where I read about this experiment. It's not annotated in my notes from 25 years ago. I think it's Yale University. I think there was a study a long time ago, and volunteer subjects were asked to walk down a corridor and to stop when a light flashed. Now, indeed, there was no light at all. But more than half of the volunteers at some point did stop. That is the way it works. By working through us in the direction we set by our acceptance. And I guess another way of saying it is that what you and I are expecting may very well become accurate predictors of outcomes because of the creative energy that is flowing through us. Now, another example. One time when Henry Ford was asked if he was worried that he might lose a lot of money if his plans went wrong, he said that one shouldn't think about things going wrong. In the article, he answered, "You must never, even for a second, let yourself think that you can fail. Our first principle is that failure is impossible. You may not get what you are trying to do right the first time or the second time or the 10th time or the 100th time. But if you shut out of your mind the possibility of being licked, then you're bound to win. You know, I read that and I was sitting there thinking, you know, when I gave this message 25 years ago, I was 25 years younger. So it came out more like a personal, positive, motivational speech. More so than what I'm comfortable with now. You know? Because metaphysics now, I know, is not a teaching about getting what you want when you want it. Oh, if only it were. It's not that simple. And anyone who's been around for 25 years probably knows that metaphysics is less about getting what you want and more about making sure that what you want is in alignment with oneness, truth, and goodness, the thing itself. Yes, it's fine to focus on success. But not at the expense of others, because oneness, because goodness, because truth, because of the way it works. You know, now I know that when oneness, goodness, and truth are missing from my ambitions, I may still get what I want, but something very important is absent, and I will start to spin my wheels or at least hit a glass ceiling. Metaphysics is about staying with goodness, truth, and oneness, both when I get what I want and when I don't get what I want, in the good times and the bad times. You see, the focus is less on manifestation and more on realization. Well, it actually, if I had paid attention 25 years ago, our founder says it right in the very beginning of the book, in the dedication. Don't you know? These lessons are dedicated to the truth which frees us from ourselves, which enables us to see through the mist to the eternal, changeless reality. I wish I had read that. You see, so today I would advise young Edward, turn your mind to the eternal and changeless reality and see through the mist of confusions and be free, free from unhelpful clinging. So I would tell my younger self, even better than the idea that I can change my life by changing my thinking, which is true enough as it goes, even better than that is this: I can change my life by purifying and aligning my motives. Because don't you know, it's the feeling under the thought that counts. It's the deeply held belief that I've accepted into my body and being. It's not just the random thought. It's the everything that makes me the me that I am today. My ambitions, my dreams, my acceptance, my behavior. We call that my consciousness. It's the drive that is hidden in my heart, through which will flow eventually the creative power and shape this world. That's how it works. So yes, it's helpful for me to become aware of what is in my mental household, and it's even more helpful to search through and understand my motives and my attitudes and my habits and my ambition and my love, and if possible, bring it all into alignment with the spiritual values that we are studying this year of oneness, truth, integrity, diversity, compassion, empowerment, creativity, gratitude, stewardship, unity. Because what I do dwell on, when I do dwell on these values, when I make a habit of them, oh, they will begin to influence what I want. They will begin to influence what I do. I'll start to take responsibility for the environment. I will start to advocate for the vulnerable. I will support freedom of thought. It follows. I will share. I will include. I will begin to treat people even more fairly and honorably. I'll become more resilient to disappointment, I know. I will become more and more governed from the inside and less from the outside. And I will start to move away from a me-focused life to a we-focused life, I know. Now I said, if we dwell on these values, and you know, I could have said, if we dwell on the thing itself. Yeah. In the opening of chapter 2 of The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, he says something that is very, very important. He says that the thing itself functions at the level of our concept of it. Whoa. Now, I can't end this morning without addressing that. You know, and just in a question, how big is your God idea? And how close is your God idea? And can that grow? Can that mature? So much so that you and I can trust it. Or another way of saying it. The whole point of Science of Mind is to realize the divine, to grow in knowing the ultimate truth. Why? So that when life happens, we do not waver. So when disaster strikes, we see hope. So that when society fails and corrupts, we bring love and understanding. So when hearts ache, we bring comfort. So when we perceive lack, we manifest sharing and help and community and compassion and respect and creativity and solutions. There is something in you and me and in every person and in every being, something that is in its original state, innocent, pure, untouched by the bumps and trials of this world. Something that is serene and eternal and whole. May we steadfastly remain aware of this presence within us. And learn to listen to it more than we listen to our ambitions. And I think if we can do that, perhaps we will hear what Ernest Holmes heard when he meditated. And he expressed it like this. I was told to live by some inner mystic presence. I was told to live and to love and to laugh and to be glad. I was told to be still and know of the almighty power in and through all. I was told to let that power work through and in me. And I believed that voice, and I am healed. I invite you to breathe in with me now. And exhale into a moment of quiet contemplation. And let us each one in our own way recognize that power that is the source of all. Understanding that it is beyond all names and beyond all nature. And yet we use words and images and feeling to point in the direction of eternity. I recognize it as the power of my own life, the life of my own life, the thought of my own mind, the love of my own heart. Nothing can separate me from it, and I hold this to be true of all creation and of everyone present. This leads me to a realization that in this place, a holiness is present. And through this, my prayer, I sink myself with that holiness, inviting it to flood my awareness. I realize that this is already so, that there exists no block between me and God. And so I release this moment of prayer with thanksgiving in my heart, with an appreciation, the deep appreciation of a blissful joy that exists at the heart of all creation, that place where I am. And together we say, and so it is. Once again, I invite you to take a deep breath in, followed by a sigh. We use the movement of breath to make a transition to our spiritual practice of sharing. Through your generosity, we do wonderful work in the world. We have outside in the social hall a new video of all the nonprofit partners we are assisting, working with this year through your generosity. Do take a moment to go and look at it and feel your heart connection to that. I invite the ushers to stand. Won't you please take your gift in your hand, or if you gave electronically, won't you place your hand on your chest as a symbol of your heart connection to your giving and through it to the work that the center is doing in the world. And say after me, I bless this gift.
I bless this gift.
I send it forth to heal and prosper.
I send it forth to heal and prosper.
It does amazing work in the world.
It does amazing work.
And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.